Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello Groovers, it's Graham. Welcome to our FA Cup compilation show. There's still something magical about the FA Cup final, don't you think? Wembley, the sun shining, a bowling green of a pitch. Jumpers for goalposts. Sorry, I have taken that too far. Here are some clips of our lovely guests talking about that most special day in the English football calendar. First up, the then West Ham manager, Alan Pardew, tells us of the day in 2006 when Stevie G broke his heart with an injury time equaliser from, 170 yards to force extra time and penalties. Gary McAllister, what a wonderful guest he was, continues the Liverpool theme when he talks us through his part in the Anfield Club's 2-1 win over Arsenal in the 2001 FA Cup final. It was an epic. Robbie Di Matteo scored the fastest goal in FA Cup final history back in 1997. Is it really nearly a quarter of a century ago? And he talks us through that iconic moment before a friend of the show, a friend of La Liga, Terry Gibson, takes us back to 1988 and the day that the Crazy Gang beat Liverpool to pick up that famous trophy. Finally, stay tuned for Ander Herrera's reflections on the 2016 FA Cup final, which marked his first major honour at United. Enjoy.
I'm looking at Benitez on the sideline as a manager. He's done. I can see him. He knew. He was preparing his speech for the defeat.
And then literally a football miracle happens.
And well,
have you ever seen...
These are moments that change careers. Now, if I'd have won the FA Cup then, where would I be now? What would my personality be different? It might be completely different. Bit of glory at that stage, going on to a big club, success or not success. I might not be where I am now. So these things sometimes happen for a reason. I don't actually think it's in the gods or in the... I think sometimes it's just fate. Mm. Yeah, I can't determine. An actual fact, so there we go back to what I used to do at Crystal Palace. Because Peter Grant whispered in my ear with 10 minutes to go, just get Nigel Rio-Coker to man mark Stevie Gerrard and we've done it, right? Oh. And I went, because I'm not stupid, that was a good idea. So we man marked Stevie Gerrard. And if you watch the game, because now I'm telling you, you'll know. You watch the last 7 or 8 minutes of that game, Nigel Rio-Coker was all over him like a rash. And Steve Gerrard decided to drop off deep because he wasn't influencing the game, he wasn't getting a kick. And Nigel Rio-Coker, being the honest pro that he was, stayed deep.
Defends the space.
To prevent the back four. Stevie Gerrard picks it up and shoots from
another country,
yards.
Basically.
So there you go. So we did everything right. I could look back, I still look back on that time and that goal, and I could see it now, and I don't blame Nigel Rio-Coker, because if it was me, I'd have done exactly the same as him. That was a natural instinct, yeah, that he had to do, was protect the back four, not go and mark Stevie Gerrard. I'm going to do nothing from there.
There's one that obviously, which is massive to me, you know, and it really stung, it really hurt more than probably one of the most disappointing. And then obviously the day turned out actually no bad, but we win the League Cup. Mm-hmm. We're going to get to the FA Cup final, Arsenal, and we're were in Dortmund to play Alaves in the UEFA Cup final. So if you sat the whole squad in a room like this, round this a big dining table like this, and you asked every player in that room, I think you could cut the room in half. So you asked the British players of the two finals, which one do you want to play in? Mm-hmm. Bearing in mind that Gerrard was always giving me the nudge of which one I was going to be playing in, mm-hmm. or which games I was going to play in. Know that I thought I'd play in any of them. Maybe I'll play in two of them. Mm-hmm. But if you ask me, I want to play in the FA Cup final. Mm-hmm. Because I grew up as a wee boy watching FA Cup finals. Used to go down over the border with my dad and all his mates to watch live coverage of BBC England in Moffat. Because it was normally it was always Rangers Celtic. We fed up watching Rangers Celtic. We'd drive down into the borders at Moffat and watch English Cup. So there was no Wembley at the time. It was the millennium.
Man, it's not Wembley.
It was brilliant. But so I get told an hour and a half before the FA Cup final against Arsenal that I'm not playing, and I'd scored in four games in a row before it. But obviously that was sweetened when Michael scored these two goals and we won the FA Cup. And the celebration, Gerrard comes and nudges me in the side. He says, be ready, you'll be playing on Wednesday in Dortmund in the UEFA Cup final. So
this is where I'd be gutted, because you came on and the game was Arsenal's for a long chunk of time. You came
battered.
On and changed
Graham,
things.
We get battered. They battered
I'm
us.
I'm trying to be gentle on how I say it. And I think they tired. Was it brutal hot? Because I thought it was brutal.
Well, I had ice towels. Obviously, I'm challenged a wee bit up here up top.
I think it's the look.
It is the look.
Thank you.
No doubt about that. But yeah. I think there was shown 100 degrees pitch side.
Oh la la.
One of the little thermometers were there. Obviously, 60,000 people inside there as well, but boiling.
And a good, hard-running, clever Arsenal side that deserved their lead. But they go, don't they? They particularly go in terms of the space that they allow, I think.
Stephen Henshaw clears one off the line, which was just, he only used one arm, which I think that's why he got away with it. But that was clear. So that's 2-0 in the game had been.
How's your luck? I mean, these things happen.
But then I just come on, and there was a free kick up into the back post. Marcus Babbel keeps it in the box, and Michael swivels and hits it on the half turn. And then Michael's second goal, it was great through ball from Patrick Berger, and he's running away from Lee Dixon. And there can only be one square in the net where he can score, and he hits it. He hits that corner. It was an amazing goal.
I still to this day don't quite know how he did it. It looked impossible, and it looks as if the keeper must get there.
There's part of his stage, well, how Seaman would saved it, but it's a great finish.
But I had felt, just watching, just as an observer, I was sitting watching with Johnny Greek, and I said, this is turned, there's only one side now. I don't know how it was going to happen.
Do you know, by the end, I don't know, if you ever get a chance, I have watched it back, we could have won 4. Mm. Even after that, we had two other chances, which we, I think we had 3-1, Robbie, myself and Bergen were breaking away, and we choose the wrong pass, but at the end we could have ended up winning 3 or 4.
For something
one.
About muscle memory again, because they just, as soon as Arsenal's players realise that we've got it, it isn't happening. And I don't know if it was your confidence or the quality throughout the team, or whether it was you were younger, fitter, whatever, mm-hmm. as a group, mm-hmm. there is that moment, and there was a moment where I could tell that I didn't know who was going to score or how it was going to come, but you just knew. And up until that moment you couldn't really see how it could be, in all honesty.
I think it's a trait as well that follows a select band of clubs. Many times they do it. Mm. Many times the Liverpool get that last minute. Celtic, Rangers, Manchester,
Bayern Munich, Real Madrid. Is it attitude?
It's just that never ever surrendering or saying you're beat.
Yeah.
At no point, you just don't know what's going to happen.
And we've been beat, honestly.
It was a proper beating. Arsenal, it was a proper
I hope that wasn't
lesson.
Exaggerating that.
It was a massive doing.
They were very good also.
They were very good on the day. And to come out, they couldn't believe it. They were shell-shocked.
I watched many, many cup finals, but even back in Switzerland, it was a big... It was a big event, the FA Cup final in Switzerland. Yeah, I mean, they wouldn't show the games, but the FA Cup final, it was always live on TV. And what I remember as well is that, the perception of England was that, it always rains in England. Every time I watched the FA Cup final, it was like a sunny day, or nine times out of ten, it was like...
That's a good point. I don't remember a rainy FA Cup final.
It was like a sunny day, and you'd think, why do they always say that it rains in England? So,
from Switzerland to Wembley, you're sitting there, I didn't know what you were going to say, that the FA Cup was a big event in Switzerland, that even that you'd watched it with a kind of half, God, that's an interesting event, English football, English weather, and then you end up, poor old Middlesbrough again, at Wembley in the cup final.
Right.
Tell me, what does it mean, getting there, the excitement, Wembley? Forgive me, you'd played at Wembley before?
No, that was the first time. It was the first time that I played at Wembley. Well, I mean, the whole week leading to the final, the FA Cup final, was a new experience for me, because obviously you have all the media commitments and so on, and, you know, new suit and the song, you know, record the song. And so it was all new and fun and exciting as well.
This is with Suggs, right?
Hmm?
Chelsea Blue Day.
Yeah. And so then you get to the hotel the day before the game, and again, it was quite a relaxed atmosphere in our hotel, you know. And again, that's probably because of Ruud, you know, he was just so chilled. So we were quite confident, you know, before the game, because we knew we had a good team, and if we turned up on the day, we had a good chance. So we were quite confident. But I didn't, not for one single second did I think that I would score a goal. I mean, so we went into the game, and obviously, you know, the quickest goal in the history happened to me, and Dennis Wise, you know, still claims that he made an assist in that final, which, you know, okay, if you do a pass a ball in your own half, if you call it an assist, I mean, okay, you can do that. But
I think that's you congratulating him for the quality of his pass, is it? In your own dry way.
Well, it doesn't qualify in the football.
His vision, the weight of the pass. Come on.
Anyway, so he passes me the ball, and I start running forward, and I saw Mark Hughes in front of me making a movement, and I'm thinking, no, I'm not going to give it to Mark Hughes, he's just going to lose the ball or whatever. So I just pulled the trigger, and luckily the ball dipped a little bit, the goalkeeper was a bit in front of the goal line, and it was a great start to this final for us, and it certainly gave it even more confidence, and it settled a bit the nerves, because it was a final, it was important, you know, winning that would mean playing in European competition the season after, finishing the year with a trophy after 25 years for the club. So quite important, you know, actually very important.
Even though you weren't super nervous and it was a relaxed group and you were confident strategically against Middlesbrough, you were aware of the weight of expectation from fans who hadn't seen a trophy for a quarter of a century, at least.
Yeah, I was used to it because I played the in Italy, so the Roman derbies and the games in Italy. The way
Chelsea Middlesbrough is okay in terms of pressure.
No, you get used to it. I was 20, no, by that time I was still 26, just about to get to become to turn 27. But you get used to it. You don't think about that anymore.
But around you, there would have been nerves.
Yes, quite a bit of nerves.
The English players, for example, Wembley would have meant, as special as it was for you, who'd seen it as a kid in Switzerland. I didn't know that. For them, it must have been. If you talk about the goal taking away nerves, you're talking more about your teammates than you.
Yeah, the team. I mean, as a group, as a team. Yeah, obviously, you know, it was a great start. You know, early goal in the final, it sets you up, you know, for a good. I mean, for a high probability of winning the game.
Can you close your eyes? Can you feel the euphoria? Can you remember the feeling?
Oh yes. I mean, I lost my mind for like 10 seconds when I started running like a rabbit, like a crazy man. And you can see, obviously, you know, everybody was full of joy. I mean, the stadium was rocking. It was incredible.
One of the happiest sporting moments of your life?
Absolutely, yes.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everybody knows, listen to this, that you're Terry Gibson FA Cup winner. Mm-hmm. Probably some don't know that you're Terry Gibson European Championship winner for England.
Yeah, as a youngster, yeah.
Under 18. But we'll touch on that. But still, even though they know you're an FA Cup winner, they don't know the ludicrous personal situation that you were in to be able to turn out at Wembley on that blazing hot day against Liverpool. And I think it's worth explaining, because I think it's people don't know the struggles that players have, or the risks they take, or sometimes what they're willing to do to achieve their personal moment of glory. And in this instance, this interview, that applies to you.
Do you know, I fractured my pelvis when I was 14 and played within 6 weeks because we had a cup final. And there's nothing there. I had this Oscar Slatus disease when I was at Spurs and took no time off at all. So you kind of become accustomed to, if I can, I will, which has massively changed now. Whereas, you know, they're finely tuned, too finely tuned. Mm-hmm. And I remember older players having injections in their knees and their feet. Mm. I had injections in my groins, in my ribs, ankles, and because it was expected of you to do it. And also you didn't want to miss a game. You wanted to play. So that season that we're talking about, the FA Cup, I actually had a hernia. So I missed the first two rounds. What is known as a Gilmore's groin. I was one of the first to have it.
Well done.
I was in this continuous pain in my groin and hip and lower back that no one had ever really identified what it was, and it was a kind of hernia. And he would stick his finger in through the skin and find the tear, and you'd hit the roof with pain, and he would do something. It was Otis Gilmore is his name, and he became famous for carrying out all these surgeries that players in the past had suffered, and there was no real sort of cure for it. So I was lucky that there was someone around that knew what the problem was. Mm. So I had that done. There was no rehabilitation done at the clubs. You remember I mentioned earlier about United? So Littleshaw came up with that idea of there was no rehabilitation for long-term injured players, or even short, medium, long-term. So you would go residential at Littleshaw, who had the staff there and the facilities there, because clubs weren't interested in you if you were out for 6 months, because there was one physio that looked after all the players at the club, did all the strappings, all the treatment, so you would be neglected. So you would go together to Lillishaw and train there, and a group of like-minded people that are injured, fighting their way back. I remember doing a circuit there after my hernia, and I felt the other side tear. I literally heard it tear. Yeah. I was doing a exercise on the wall bars, lifting your legs up and down the strength, and I literally, it was like a piece of paper, and I thought, surely that's not it again, but it's the other side. And part of it was the learning process about that particular injury was the other side compensates, and it more often than not, that's going to tear. So I thought, oh, no. So I came back and spoke to the club, and they said, no, it can't have happened. Started training, still feeling the pain, and then we came to an arrangement that I would play whilst we were still in the FA Cup. So I wouldn't train, I would play, and then recover. Now, recovery was just, I was doing what I criticised the Man United players. There was no, I would have to drive into Wimbledon and have a bath, in an old tin bath. I got one at home, but it was a real thing in back in the day that coming for a bath. Sometimes you drive 2 hours to go and have a bath when you got one. Anyway, so there was no physio.
Training.
I wasn't training. I couldn't jog. Towards the end of the week, I could jog in straight lines, but I couldn't sprint round corners or go fast round corners. I wore these ridiculous neoprene thick shorts under my match shorts when I was playing.
Kind of like a groin corset or a hernia corset.
Exactly what it was.
To hold it in.
Yeah. And then we got through one round, and then the next round, and the next round. And so I'd probably done that early March, I'd probably say, from March till May. I barely trained. because if I trained, it would hurt for 2 or 3 days. So I would play, then hurt for 2 or 3 days and recover, and then play again in the next game. So, and what made it worse, I actually picked up a medial knee ligament injury as well. So if you look in the semi-final, I've got strapping around my knee, and that's to hold the joint together. And then 6 days before the final, I'm pretty sure I broke my, what is now known as metatarsal, but it used to be just a bone in the top of your foot that I kicked through the bottom of Paul McGrath's boot.
You're playing Man United,
at Old Trafford,
yeah.
6 days before the final. I'd scored, and then had another shot. Paul's blocked the shot, and I've hit the bottom of his boot. I can't get my boot on 24 hours before the cup final because it's swollen. So I slept, when I did get it on, with my boot on.
Couldn't, in a situation like
couldn't
that,
get shoes on.
When you can't get your shoes on, your foot's really swollen. Yeah. One of the things you should never do is go to the pub. So luckily you didn't.
No. What? I didn't drink, though.
What? But you did go to the
we
pub
trained,
the night before the FA Cup final, right?
And also, we trained for 3 hours that night before the cup final. So when people say, what makes the spirit? It wasn't hard. It wasn't intense. It wasn't physical.
It's
we
still
trained
3 hours.
For 3 hours on set pieces.
Okay.
Did normal training, and we're doing this, and we're making sure everything's pinned down defensively,
still
attackingly, still at the public training ground where everyone's watching.
Could
anyone
watch?
There's no way you can stop anyone watching that training session, but no one did. And we trained for 3 hours specifically on defending set pieces, attacking set pieces. The amount of detail that went in, and the amount of hard work that went in, the amount of fitness training that went in. Not to my liking, because I woke up on a Saturday at Wimbledon, some games knackered, tired from a week's training, as opposed to feeling on top of the world at Spurs when we had the sharp, quick stuff, the skills, the kick-up on the Friday. Sometimes it was that hard. We would do long-distance running, and we would do unnecessary box, to non-specific fitness training for footballers. It was just grueling, day in, day out. On a heavy pitch, by the time it comes Saturday, I woke up Saturday thinking, I feel like I've played already, let alone feeling at my best, feeling sharp. But the attention to detail, the hard work, the preparation, the professionalism, I've been nowhere better than at Wimbledon. Mm. In that everybody knew their jobs. You got sick to death of the training sessions, the routines, the repetitiveness of the each day, 11-a-side every day. Hated it. You know, long distance running after 11 aside, hated it. But I quite liked that we were winning games of football, not getting beat, and ultimately winning a trophy. So people ask me, how did that work out? They all think we're a bunch of Herberts that had a laugh and a joke and found their way into an FA Cup final. It was arguably the most professional group of players that I've worked with the right manager. And the right coach.
You substitute everything you've said, and it's Atletico Madrid.
Yeah, exactly.
At its very best.
We believe at Wimbledon we invented the channel ball, the in-swinging free kick. Before we did it, no one did an in-swinging free kick. Ends up winning us the FA Cup final. The diving header, we invented that. the goalkeeper dribbling out, near enough, as far as they'd let him.
To gain some territory so that the ball goes.
He was best, was pinging it in the 18-yard box from 15 yards. So all the things that are detrimental to football in general, well, if I was an outsider, I'd be looking at it and thinking, why do you claim credit for that? But it was literally something different, something that came from Dave Bassett that was moved on, that Don Howe and Bobby Gould progressed with, to being so organised. The fittest players I've ever played with the boys at Wimbledon. We were programmed, fit, great attitude, never say die. When we came together over that white line, before kick-off, we were together. Whatever happened off the field, Monday to Friday or Saturday night, didn't matter.
Yeah.
But against the odds, we were going to win games of football and ultimately win a trophy.
And your mate gets the goal, which is a nice part of the story.
And he should have been there. After all that 3 hours training, Corky should have been there and not Sanj. Corky messed up. Corky still is bitter about it now. Alan Cork.
I know who you mean.
Yeah.
Jack's.
Yeah, Jack's dead, yeah. Corky was meant to be where Sanch was. I can remember it. I was edge of the box, and I remember Sanch said, Corky, go there.
You're now out of my comfort. You don't have to explain it.
We had the in-swinging free kick.
Yeah.
And as I say, we trained for 3 hours, and Corky still got it wrong. I don't know whether he thought he would use his experience, because he was a clever player, Corky, and try something different. And Sanch was shouting. I remember Sanch shouting, and Corky, go, like, near. Go exactly position I'm trying to describe it, where Laurie scored from. That was meant to be Corky, and Sanch was meant to be somewhere else. Sanch saw that Corky wasn't there and thought,
filled the space.
I'm going to go, yeah, and then
and gets a goal.
So Corky still says, should have been me. And it should have been him. And he would have done exactly the same, because that was his speciality, wasn't it, Corky? The glancing header.
There's a price for being a free spirit, Corky. Exactly. There is a price for being a free spirit.
So it should have been Corky.
You qualified, you turned the last FA Cup semi-final before this season.
Everton.
With an assist, and then didn't play in the final. That must have been a given what you've explained about tension and...
To be honest, what I think always when I play or when I don't play is that the manager is doing the best for the team. I never take any decision personally. Never. Because I put myself in their position and I cannot even imagine that someone is taking a decision just to kill someone. I don't trust it at all.
No.
When you're a manager, you take your decisions because you think it's the best thing for the team and you are trying everything to win the game. He can be right or he can be wrong, but I never take the decisions like personally, honestly. Of course, you want to play every game. You want to feel part of the things always. You want to play, you want to be protagonists of things. But this is Manchester United. You cannot ask yourself to play every game of the season because we are in one of the best clubs in the world, one of the richest clubs in the world. We have the capacity to sign the best players in the world. So as soon as I'm ready to play, as soon as I have done everything to be ready, if the manager doesn't choose me, I will be angry 2 minutes. The third minute, I will be thinking, how can I help the team to win the final?
That's
so against Crystal Palace, I was thinking, if the manager needs me now to play, what can I do? When we lost Chris Smalling because he was sent off, how could I help the team now to win the final?
If I come on, I'll be ready with ideas.
And that's it. I never take the decisions of the managers personally. Same as when I play, I don't ask why I'm playing. So when I don't play, I don't go to the manager to ask why I'm not playing.
You've got a very logical brain.
I just try to keep my balance because I don't want to be like a montaña rusa. How do you say, you know?
A roller coaster.
How do you call it?
Roller coaster.
Roller coaster. I don't want
to
be like...
There's no way to explain that word, actually, what a roller coaster is.
Do you understand what I'm talking about? I don't want to be one day because I'm playing the happiest and the next day because I'm not playing, I'm the saddest in the world.
Up and down.
Up and down. I don't like that. No. I like to keep my balance. To keep my balance always. And I think if you find that balance, you're happier in life.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.